Welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Hallowell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we are checking in with relationships in the dead of winter. We're doing a little update on celebrity skincare.
That's right.
And we're talking about the wedding planner 20 years later.
It's going to be good. Guys, follow us on Twitter at teatime_33 and Instagram at teatimepod. Before we get into the show, let's take a quick break. All right, like Amelia said, Tea Time is checking in with relationships in the dead of winter. It's dry outside. It's dry out here in the celebrity relationship world. But we got a couple of updates, some big, some small. First, in my opinion, is quite small, which says a lot because I'm the one that's, I mean, Amelia really are the ones who are supposed to care about the Kardashians. But apparently, Kourtney Kardashian is dating Travis Barker. And for those who don't know, he is known for being the drummer of Blink-182. So very successful in his own right, completely different world than where the Kardashian family comes from. But apparently they've been friends for a really long time. They live in the same Calabasas community and they have found each other. And I guess we're happy. Amelia, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want this to be like anti-Scott. I'm trying to be like nicer about things. And I really do. I mean, it's gross that he's dating a 19-year-old, but
yes.
You know, she just needed to move on from him, I think. And I think this Travis guy is, he's a, like, I'm sure they're similar age ranges. Yes. And he has children, too. Seems like, why not,
yes.
You know?
So true. Yeah, he's 45. You know, if Scott is going to continue dating, you know, women younger than 20, that's fine. Because I was in the boat of one of the OGs who are like, they need to be back together. And their paths have just not crossed back yet. So I'll be patient. Yeah. She should fill her time with other things. So sure. Great.
You guys both happy get this her. Very specific look on your face when you're talking about the Kardashians, where you're like trying to be optimistic and you're like, you both kind of like sigh and then you're like, okay, here we go. It just gets me every time.
It's a heavy weight of burden that we carry on our shoulders. Yeah. All right, let's keep going. Next relationship update.
Very exciting news. Friend of the Ringer NBA beat. Not friend of Tea Time
yet. Oh my
God,
yes.
But we'll get her. I'm talking about Halsey. She is pregnant. She posted this week some maternity pictures where she's outside. She's got a baby bump. She looks fabulous. And Twitter just exploded. I guess if you're a fan of Halsey, if you know, she just has talked for a very long time about her struggles with fertility and with reproductive health. She's had some miscarriages that she's been very open about. She has a song on her last album that was all to like her future baby about how much she wants a child and how much she wants to be a mother. Mm-hmm. And she's 26, which to me, I just turned 26 and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like way too young to be a mother. But like, it's just like, you see this person, she said in interviews, like she wants to be a mother more than anything else in the world, more than being a pop star, more than anything else. And she never thought she'd get there. So it's just very, you just love to see it. She, yeah. She tagged who we assume to be the father of the baby in the pictures. It's her boyfriend, Alev Aiden. They seem very close. He's a screenwriter. They just got matching tattoos in each other's handwriting, which is very romantic, wow. Very cute. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she just seems very happy in a place that she has wanted to be in for a very long time. So yeah, we stan. Yeah. We love it.
Halsey, be our friend, please.
Please, please. Yes. We don't want to learn about the NBA, but we'll do anything else. Let me know.
All right, next one, Amelia.
You know, I just, shout out to Pam Anderson for... You know, enduring Tommy Lee for one, and then enduring like Kid Rock. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she and her bodyguard apparently, I guess, connected over the past few months.
Hell yeah, baby.
Exactly. Now they're married, which.
Freaking crazy.
It's a movie. It's like a movie.
I'm like, the bodyguard.
It
but
is
like,
the bodyguard. Yeah.
Like, Pamela, maybe it'll be like one of those Lifetime movies where it's like Pamela Anderson presents the bodyguard.
That's so true.
The only difference is that they're just in quarantine the whole time.
Exactly. So yeah, happy for her. Also, I guess because she was so happy, she decided to quit Instagram and she left us with one one last post. And if the listeners don't mind, I'm going to read it.
Please do.
She posted a sexy pouty pic of herself, which what I think the funniest part about this picture is that if you go onto her Instagram, it's there. It is like one of the lowest res photos I've ever seen. Celebrities love to post these like old low res photos, and it just cracks me up.
It's like from a good 20 years ago.
Exactly. It's been passed around several times. Like the JPEG size is like 2.
I know. That's okay. Definitely, she got that on one of her fan pages. Like she couldn't find it on Google. It's too many pages.
Just
deep,
screenshotted it.
She 2XX.
Exactly. Okay. This is Pamela Anderson. This will be my last post on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. I've never been interested in social media. And now that I'm settled into the life I'm genuinely inspired by, reading and being in nature, I am free. Thanks for the love. Blessings to you all. Let's hope you find the strength and the inspiration to follow your purpose and try not to be seduced by wasted time. Prayer hand emoji. That's what they, in all caps, want and can use to make money. Control over your brain. Hashtag the bewildered herd. Hashtag no Instagram. Hashtag no Twitter. Hashtag no Facebook. Hashtag life. Hashtag freedom. Hashtag nature. Hashtag human connection. Hashtag intimacy. Hashtag love. Hashtag Pamela Anderson.
Gotta get that brand recognition in there right at the end.
Wow.
Right? And even though she's leaving.
For those who can't see it, and the reason Mila read it, is it's like a bad haiku where it's just broken up in a million different, like, indistinguishable ways.
There's some artful spacing.
Really.
So shout out. Best of luck, Pamela Anderson. I'm jealous of you.
That's the dream. Honestly, Pamela, that's what we're all working towards, is to marry our hot bodyguard and quit social media. So
exactly.
Happy for her.
Yes. Right, last thing in relationship news is, you know, just a surprising relationship between two celebrities. Not a romantic one, but it could be, you know, never say never. I'm talking about the Variety Actors on Actors conversation between Pete Davidson and Glenn Close. First of all, whoever put these two together, genius. Thank you so much. It's a 73-year-old acting legend, obviously Glenn Close, like 7-time Oscar nominee. And 27-year-old dirtbag Pete Davidson.
Hey.
So, like, the perfect combination. And their conversation was actually very entertaining. A couple highlights, like Pete Davidson's poodle was running around in the background. Pete Davidson talks about how he thought Glenn Close was British, which honestly, she does have that, like,
totally
the crown, like, she's Harry Potter of, like, Helen actress Mirren. Vibe. Yeah. Right. Which Maggie Smith, Helen Mirren, Glenn Close, like, should all, you know, be in the same British class, but they're not. You know, Glenn Close talked about how she kept all her costumes from playing Cruella de Vil, which is iconic. She wrote it into her contract that she could have all of them, which was great. Mm-hmm. And she talked about how she's okay if she never wins an Oscar, which is sad, but it's good to come to terms with that. And I just love that Pete Davidson was just, like, very interested in her, which, like, who among us is not? Mm-hmm. I would love to know, like, what information Glenn Close had about Pete Davidson before this interview. Mm-hmm. Like, great did question. She know who he was? What did she know about him? Like, what was her frame of reference for Pete Davidson? Like, did she see the BDE article? Is that how she knew about him? Did she know about Ariana Grande? Like, I'm so
curious.
And
one follow-up question. Do you think she was immediately on board, or do you think she had a moment where she's like, anybody else? Like, is that
are you sure? Zendaya instead, right? Like, are we sure she's busy? Are we sure? Yeah. I don't know. I feel like she's a good hang. So she was probably just, like, down for whatever.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
True.
Yeah.
Poor Glenn, you know, I feel like has been so deserving of an Oscar so many times. And freaking, I mean, I do love Olivia Colman, but she just, like, stole it right out.
She really
from
did.
Underneath her. Oh my
she
God.
Thought Glenn thought she had it. She wore that all gold dress.
Oh,
like,
my
that's
God.
That's what you wear when you're winning an Oscar.
So true. So true.
So, yeah. We're still rooting for Glenn. I don't know about Hillbilly Elegy, but we'll talk about the Oscars more as we get to that.
Sure will.
Time.
All right. Next category, not worth the tea / this week in social media. Starting out in a really bizarre way, but I'm so excited for you to talk about it, Amelia.
Yes. You know, I don't even fully understand this story. It's so 17 came out with an interview with Lily Reinhart, who plays Betty on the CW's Archie TV, Riverdale, sorry. And apparently the person who contacted them and gave them this interview wasn't actually Lily Reinhart. And so they had to publish this backtrack statement. They're like, we're so sorry. We removed the story from our site and we regret the erroneous reporting. We take full responsibility, blah, blah, blah. And so it was this whole thing. And Lily Reinhart also talked about it on her Instagram story. She was like, for some bizarre reason, someone impersonated me in an interview with 17. Nothing inappropriate was said, but those were not my words and I wanted to address it. So this... Yeah,
it's so strange because it's so innocuous. Like the interview, which was like somebody found it on like YouTube, on like Yahoo or something. Like,
but it was pretty scrubbed. Aggregates it.
And it was like four quotes about the future of Betty and Jughead or Archie on Riverdale. It was just like about their characters and where their characters were going. Like there was nothing personal, nothing controversial.
Is it weird that that's almost scarier? Like there's someone, yes. I guess it probably is like a Riverdale head who just like, I don't know how they manage that.
They
but
do have like really hardcore fans and like hardcore shippers. And like, so I think maybe they were trying, it was like a fan that was like trying to stir shit up and was like, oh, we're going to like put Betty with Archie instead of Jughead or whatever. I don't really know. But I think that could be part of it. Also, I saw that the impersonator, it was someone was impersonating her and someone was impersonating the publicist.
So yes.
Like via email. Apparently, they got in touch with a bunch of different places and 17 was the only one that ran with it. Which if you're Lily Reinhart, are you thinking like they thought it was like an interview with Lily Reinhart and like only 17 wanted it? Like, are you a little bit offended that no one else ran with like a supposed interview with you?
True.
I think I would be offended a little bit.
Yeah, I guess.
But I don't know.
Just really weird. Yeah, it says, I'm reading this BuzzFeed article, and it says that the person that gave the interview dropped hints about a Betty and Archie romance. And so I guess the Barchie fans were trying to be like, wait a second, Bugheads, because Bugheads is Betty and Jughead. Yeah. So the Barchie fans are out here just causing a lot of drama.
It has to be just like a crazy fan who like decided they could get away with it.
And I know that I am extremely naive, but like if someone said this, I don't know, why would you not believe that a publicist and that like some random interview from Lily Reinhart would not be real? It just is so weird.
Very
so
weird.
So weird.
Very weird.
Anyway, mystery.
Swiftly moving on. still confused. Okay, so we're going to do a quick Bachelor update because obviously, you know, we've all experienced the show. I want to take a temperature check of Kate. I feel like you're probably not watching this show still, but you were riding hard for Katie, Vibrator Girl. And since the premiere, she has only gotten better and better. And people have been singing her praises because she's the only nice person on this show.
Let me tell you, when we watched The Bachelor, we did Bachelor Cringe Mode a couple weeks ago. And I just really rode hard for Dillo Girl. And I thought that would be a more popular opinion. And it wasn't on our podcast. And I was like, maybe I like just really just don't understand the mechanics of the show. That's like a little bit embarrassing that I like was my favorite person with something that no one else cared about. But like, that's fine. You know, I don't watch the show. And now I log on Twitter every fucking whatever day The Bachelor's on. And I see the tweets from the Bachelor Party account. And they're like, Katie just told off this girl and I'm Team Katie and Katie for Bachelorette. First of all, I had to relearn that Katie was Dildo Girl because I had forgotten. However, I just feel very smug that the rest of Tea Time and the rest of the world has come around because I think I saw something in her from the beginning.
You did.
I wasn't distracted by the sparkly dildo. I saw her soul and she seemed like a good hang. And I just feel very smug that I just, you know.
Normally, Dildo Girl or that trope becomes like the villain later on in The Bachelor or becomes someone who's not great later on. So history led us to believe that, but you're absolutely right. I was wrong. I think the internet was wrong a little bit. So
totally. I was so annoyed by her. I was like, we get it. You have a dildo. And then she's poking people with it. And I was like, oh, okay. But she, you know, actually she's a good person. So.
She contains multitudes.
She does. She does. Liz, how are you feeling watching this season?
Okay, I know there's one every season, but I still get so irrationally mad at this person. And obviously it's Victoria. It's the only person anyone's really talking about. Ugh. Besides that, Matt is same old, you know?
Same old Matt.
I'm ready for Victoria to go home. Are you?
Me too. I'm ready for her to go home. I'm ready for the producers to step up and stop making unnecessary drama and putting people at risk with the, I mean, I don't even want to get into it, but there's this whole escort storyline about this woman who may or may not be an escort. And it's just like, that is textbook slut shaming. Mm-hmm. You should never be ashamed of doing sex work because that's a legitimate job. And mm-hmm. It's just upsetting to see that the producers want to further this quote unquote dramatic storyline just because it's titillating. And it's just like, yeah. Oh my, like, grow up. Again, like, I see them complain on Twitter being like, why haven't we won an Emmy? And it's like, bitch, why do you think? Take a few seconds to think about this.
Oh yeah, God. And from an outsider perspective, it seems like it's dramatic enough. Like, the seems right, like right. There's just a lot of drama anyway. So I just don't, it just seems unnecessary.
I'm right at the point of the season, Amelia. I'm curious if you are too, where like it kind of differentiates itself from like the good where you actually get into the love story and then the, mm-hmm. they're hanging on by a thread to this yes. drama that keeps people coming back every week.
Totally.
And it happens every season where I'm like, just get rid of them. Just like, let's shed it. Let's like go to the real love story.
So true.
How real it is. And I always get exhausted at this point in the season, I feel like.
I feel before I used to have to watch the show for work, I would usually stop at this point because it would like, this is just like, oh my God. Yeah. Like they're again trying to milk this out for 2 hours every Monday. And it's just like, I don't have the time. I don't have the time. So
yeah.
Hopefully it gets better and people leave like Victoria, but who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
In the meantime,
rooting for Katie.
Rooting for Katie and watch Amelia's show.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
All right, next update. Kate.
Exciting update in the world of, you know, child influencers. JoJo Siwa, who I don't know that we've really talked about her before on this podcast. You probably know who she is. She is used to be like she was on Dance Moms and she became like this incredibly famous, like lucrative child influencer who has like the ponytail and she had a bow line and she has all this like rainbow merchandise and she had a game. And she just is like, you know, has a contract with Nickelodeon, just like has a ton of money, a ton of influence on like younger children. She, over the past couple of weeks, has started to hint that she is a member of the LGBT plus community. It was kind of like a queerness soft launch, like a very like sort of like segmented coming out where like she posted a video of herself singing Born This Way and then with like a bunch of like gay TikTokers. And then it was like she, you know, posted something else and people were like, is she coming out? Like, we're not sure. We can't really tell. And she finally like went on Insta Live, like cleared it up, officially came out. She's 17. She has just an incredible influence on like young people. And there's a really good article in Them by Naveen Kumar who talked about just like she's the first like truly like young sort of like family friendly like public figure like this to really come out in this way. And they talked about how, you know, when Miley Cyrus came out, like she used to be kind of this figure. But by the time she came out, she was like, you know, creating a lot of like adult content and like JoJo Siwa and, you know, even like Little Nas X and stuff like that. Like, even if they're popular with younger kids, like they don't have this like extremely family friendly image. And so, I mean, first of all, it's just great that like JoJo Siwa is like doing her thing, you know, coming out, being herself. But also, you know, it's someone who has like this very specific family friendly image and just can contribute a lot to normalization in kids and like just like being who you are from like whatever early age you want to be. So very exciting. We love to see it.
Totally. And we also, I think going off of what you said about her demographic, I would even argue that her demographic is younger than like Little Nas X and Miley Cyrus too. So that's great as well. And it's just like, go off.
My favorite JoJo thing. Someone, like probably some older Karen woman, commented and was like, this is it. Like, me and my children are gonna stop watching you. And all she responded back, she's like, okay, with like a little exclamation mark. It's just like she's continuing her positivity, just like doesn't give a fuck what, you know, stupid people are saying about her.
Yeah. Her whole brand is already like rainbows and sparkles.
Yes.
So it was like 90% of the way there already. Also, she posted a picture. Her cousin gave her a shirt that said best gay cousin ever. And Lil Nas X on Twitter responded and said, if you spell swag backwards, it's gay. Coincidence?
I love him.
I know, I love him too. And now I'm just going to have, I can't believe I'm going to have to stand JoJo Siwa in the year of our Lord 2021.
We're going to have to.
Why not?
No choice.
Her Christmas song was actually kind of a bop.
There you go.
I'm just saying.
That's all we need.
One quick thing for me, because their fan bases scare me. I'm just going to read the fact. But we'd be remiss not to talk about it. Gigi Hadid, like, very subtly revealed
her daughter's name. It was in her Instagram bio, and there was no big post, no big nothing. Of course, every outlet ran with it, but she just put in her Instagram bio, Kai's mom. And like everyone was like, holy shit, this is it. This is the announcement. Putting together other pieces. Zayn actually got his daughter's name tattooed on him in Arabic, which like fans also caught in, as he was posing in some other photo. Fans are speculating that it's connected to both Kai's, like Zayn and Gigi's heritage or their parents' heritage, because Zayn's dad is from Pakistan and then Gigi Hadid's dad is from Palestine. So in Arabic, the name Kai translates to the chosen one or royalty. Ooh. Very beautiful name, and we like that it wasn't some big showy post. I thought it was kind of sweet.
I agree. It's subtle, and it's also like, we know we're famous enough that people will see this immediately, and it will make every headline anyway. You know?
True. Very true.
Kind of a flex. I liked it.
I like it, too. And then lastly, we're doing a real quick celeb skincare update.
Hell yeah.
First thing is, Cardi B, with all 16 million of her Twitter followers, has outsourced her skincare questions, which I just find to be so endearing and hilarious. She tweeted just plainly, and she goes, I've been breaking out recently and my face is extremely dry. I don't think these products are working. What are some like good pointers, products, whatever? And I just love that she opened up the floor to 16 million people to give her skincare advice, because I think I would maybe do the same. People are suggesting like the Ordinary products, which like, of course, it's like, you know, of the moment right now. And then I guess Kalani actually gave her like an esthetician recommendation and some like real celeb products.
See, that's who she needs. She just like be hitting up like the text chains. Because with Cardi B, if you have 16 million followers, like you may as well just Google it. You know, like you're not going to have, if you have hundreds and hundreds and thousands of responses, like you're not narrowing anything down. So like you may as well just Google it.
And then she posted an up close, very blurry photo of her cheek, like of the acne that she's been suffering. Goes, this is my cheek. It's been happening for like 3 months. Shit is really uncomfortable.
Go to a dermatologist.
You're like an A-list. I just can't believe it. And I love that she would just post that for the world to be like, help me, masses. Anyway, I hope she gets skincare help because it's hard out there to weed through all the products.
It really is.
And then other thing, we'll be talking about her much, much more in depth later on in this pod, but J.Lo Beauty, now available at Sephora. Happy for her. She's been having to do a lot of defending herself on, you know, the products that really make her skin glow.
She is out here spinning lies. I just can't deal with it. Okay. So you've probably seen, we've discussed J.Lo's skincare lies before. She talked about how she like puts olive oil on her face and like that's how she stays young. Obviously she has pivoted to like saying like these are the products that she uses, but she is out here saying that again and again, louder and louder, that she has never had any sort of work done in terms of Botox or fillers or plastic surgery. And maybe she hasn't, like for the sake of journalistic integrity, like maybe she hasn't, but it just seems wildly unlikely. And I just feel like you can be beautiful and 51 and honest all at the same time.
I will certainly be getting Botox in my life probably at some point. She's really leaning in. The thing that I hate the most is the, well, maybe I don't hate it. Maybe I'm just like jealous and resentful, but it's like the inner peace that apparently I need to not get wrinkles is the most frustrating part, which like, again, might be true. I don't know. I don't have inner peace. So like, maybe that's
the
problem.
It's like when Shawn Mendes was like, I meditate, I don't wash my face. It's like, you can do both. They don't have a correlation.
Have
like
a routine and then also be at peace. But tell me about the routine.
Yes.
So speaking of
good segue.
Routines. Amelia, what's up in your skincare world? What do you have to tell
us? Oh my God. Well, I'm here to tell you guys that, you know what? Don't buy Kylie skincare, okay? Because I made the mistake of thinking, wow, her new hyaluronic acid thing is coming out. And it's like under $30. Why not? I've been wanting to try Kylie's skin just to see, maybe my skin will like it. It's always sold out. You know, I've watched the tutorial. I've done my due diligence. I've watched the tutorials on YouTube. And for the most part, people seem to like it. They were saying the stuff is kind of drying. And honestly, so I ordered this hyaluronic serum. And let me tell you, it's, I think it said like a couple ounces or something. That's a lie because I used this thing. Maybe I was using too much, but I don't think I was, because I was using the same amount she was using with her little dropper thing. And it was gone in a matter of like a month or two. And I was like, wow, Kylie, that's how she's making her money, by giving such little product and marketing it as more than it really is.
Damn, you're onto her.
I think I might be. But watch me just actually use too much. But anyway, and it was very fragrant too. And I'm not a huge fan of fragrance.
That bugs me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fine. Honestly, I didn't feel my face become more moisturized. It was just like, okay. And I was telling you guys this. I bought a skincare line from Target called Versed Skincare, and it did the trick, you know, not Kylie, but that skincare did. So just, you know, go to your local drugstore and get the skincare there.
Amelia, the basic stuff is what works.
Has this turned you off of celebrity skincare as a whole? Or will you, maybe not J-Lo skincare line, but I don't know, Fenty, anything else?
Honestly, we talked about Fenty fat water. And on the name alone, I was like, well, I'm not buying it. So I'll give you an update on that.
Please keep us posted. I love this bit. Just you try different hyaluronic serums from celebrity skincare lines.
Like desperate to defeat the Minnesota winter at any cost.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's do cringe mode. This, I think, we're all really, really excited for. And apparently you guys are too. A couple of you guys are questioning us putting this in cringe mode. But just for all of you, it got a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes. So people thought it was cringy and still possibly do. But anyway, it's the 20th anniversary of The Wedding Planner. We're going to talk about it. Have a good time. Kate, you want to take the plot?
I will take the plot. This is my first time seeing all of this movie. And it follows iconic actress, should have been Oscar winner, but she wasn't, Lopez, who at this point maybe hadn't had Botox, looks amazing though. And she plays a wedding planner, hence the name, who gets stuck in the middle of the street one day. She doesn't want to sacrifice her shoe, which, like, the main point here is just like, always let the shoe go, save yourself. She doesn't let the shoe go. She almost gets hit by a speeding dumpster. She's saved by sexy pediatrician Steve, played by Matthew McConaughey, pre-hair plugs. And they just like have this immediate connection. Her friend, Judy Greer, convinces them to go on a date. She abandons them. So technically it's not like a date, but it ends up being a date. They dance in the rain. They don't quite kiss. They leave. They all both thought it went great. Turns out he's the groom for the wedding that J-Lo is planning. Really tough. Hate when that happens. So J-Lo is also, her dad is trying to set her up with this guy. Is it the Grey's Anatomy guy?
Is he from Grey's Anatomy?
Okay. So he's trying to set her up with him. So like, she's like sort of engaged. Matthew McConaughey very much engaged while she's planning his wedding. They have this whole like emotional cheating thing on. At the end of the movie, his whatever fiance decides she doesn't want to get married. So he's free. Her dad decides that she shouldn't marry Grey's Anatomy guy. She's free. They get together, fall in love.
Wouldn't you know?
Bada bing, bada boom. Let's do some highlights. Kate, what do you have?
This movie's a tight 40 minutes, which after our 2 weeks of 2.5 hour Sex in the City movies was just a breath of fresh air.
You're that so right.
So good. I was like, it was over and done with. They kept it tight and it was great. So all movies should be hour 40 tops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My highlight is a specific scene from this movie. They like J-Lo gets just roped into a lot of this wedding planning, like the actual couple's activities. And they are on some maybe vineyard looking at a wedding venue, and they go horseback riding for some unknown reason, just to like see the property perhaps. And J-Lo gets roped in, goes on this horseback ride with them. And the horse basically gets set off and like kind of bucks and starts sprinting away. And Matthew McConaughey, who is a pediatrician, just your average Joe pediatrician, fucking turns into Hidalgo on this trail. Starts going, starts like whipping his horse that is just like a trail horse. And I don't know that any of them could do that. Starts sprinting on this horse towards J-Lo in this like very heroic moment. Eventually, like freaking a Lord of the Rings movie, gets J-Lo from her sprinting horse onto his sprinting horse, and she's backwards, and he like saves the day. And he's just a fucking pediatrician. Not that he maybe doesn't have extreme like equestrian skills, but it was just such a funny random thing to like for him to do and be able to do. But he like saved the day. He was like the hero once again. And I really loved it. Really loved it.
Pretty charming. I didn't want to be sucked in by Matthew McConaughey in this movie. We're going to talk about his dumb glasses in a minute. But I was like, you're just a fucking cheater. But he got me by the end. He does every time. That's why he's Matthew McConaughey.
Exactly. Conflict in the movie.
Yeah. My second highlight is that every single look in this movie is a current Gen Z fashion trend. I was watching J-Lo with her fucking middle part, like kind of slicked back, still curly. She's got the blazers and the leather trench coats and the sweaters and the jeans. And I was like, oh my God, I've seen every single outfit on TikTok in the last hour.
Oh my God.
She's got monochrome outfits everywhere.
Yeah.
And
like, it looks good on her. And I just, I'm like, do we have to do this with every single trend in history? I just don't know. But she looks great. So
she does. How do you feel about Matthew McConaughey's little wire frame, little tiny glasses? They're kind of cute.
No, I'm against those. The little glasses need to stay. We can take the center part. We can do the lip liner. We can do the trenches. Yeah. But the little wire frame glasses, we cannot bring back. No.
Oh, that's cute. But that makes me laugh. And actually, just the early 2000s of this movie, I love it. And I really am also loving the early internet references. Like, there's a quote where she's like talking about Matthew McConaughey's fiance, Fran, and how her family got so rich. She's like, they're one of the biggest internet food specialty companies in America, which is just like so funny that you need to like categorize it as like internet food specialty companies. It's just like, okay. I mean, you don't do that nowadays, but because everyone's online. But I found that to be funny. And I also found it really funny as well when J-Lo's character is talking to Fran and she's like, I saw your article in Yahoo, which is just, wow. What a time capsule. Yahoo News. Oh my God.
My grandparents say that to me sometimes.
Oh, I love that. That's sweet.
Next highlight.
Another highlight. It's not even a highlight. I just found it I laughed out loud. And it's the scene where Massimo proposes to her and they're at the little Scrabble get together. And, you know, she puts the little Scrabble pieces together to spell out, okay. Like, he's done this beautiful engagement proposal and he involves like her dead mom in a way. And he has this old dollhouse that was like in the beginning of the movie that she used as a child. And like, all she can muster is, okay. And
maybe
the music
she
swells.
Didn't have a Y and an S.
That's
those
true.
Are difficult
That's
letters to find.
But it also just proves like she doesn't want to marry this guy. You know, if someone answers your proposal with, okay, they don't love you. I'm sorry.
On the flip side, I did actually think there was some real romance and sexual chemistry between J-Lo and Matthew McConaughey. There is some real good tension there, and I appreciated it. I thought they had good chemistry. And also, there are some nice lines. I actually, like, stopped in my tracks. And when Matthew McConaughey's, like, winning her over, telling her that he's, like, loved her, whatever, maybe this whole time. And he's like, I don't know this and this about you, but I know every curve of your face, every fleck of gold in your eyes. And I was like, oh my God, you can't help but get sucked in, even though it's kind of cheesy.
Totally.
Anyway.
The power of Matthew McConaughey.
It is. And then lastly, speaking of the power of Matthew McConaughey, love a good end of rom-com where Matthew McConaughey has to zip through a busy street, hit traffic, trying to win back. You know, the time's a ticking, the clock is running down. He's got to win back the love interest in this like grand gesture. Happens in almost every Matthew McConaughey movie. Happened in this one. So I liked it.
You love to
it's
see
great.
It.
Great. Never gets old.
Let's do some lowlights, Amelia.
You know, I've seen this movie so many times and probably saw it when it came out in theaters. But one thing that has always bothered me about this movie for 20 years, really one of the main things, it's the Matthew McConaughey character being like, you know, I don't eat the brown M&Ms because, or I only eat the brown M&Ms because they have less artificial flavoring because they are already brown and chocolate is already brown. And I think that is a goddamn lie. Because if you think about it, yes, chocolate is brown, but each M&M is a candy coated in chocolate. So you got the coating and I feel like you would need more artificial coloring to create the brown.
Right.
Because it's
the
so
candy
dark.
Coating is not inherently brown. It's probably white.
Thank
So you have to dye them all anyway.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Amelia, I think that this is one of the main things that stuck out to everyone who watches this movie. I don't know why, but like every person I talk to, they always are. They're like, oh yeah, the brown M&M scene. Because I think all of us were like, wait, what? Is it?
Yeah, exactly. Made us question everything we knew about M&M.
Totally. I know, like nowadays, if they remade the movie, they'd have like a deal with M&M being like, just the browns.
Right? So yeah, true. The naked ones. Yeah.
Yeah, the naked brown M&M lady.
Good. Those are good. Okay, my big low light from this movie is kind of the obvious one. And it's just the amount of emotional infidelity that happens in this movie. It makes it difficult to root for
it
this.
It really does.
Yeah.
Couple, because I just am very conflicted because, you know, they have this incredible chemistry, but also part of me is like, men are trash, you're engaged, because like he very much pursues her. Yes. She's very focused on her career. She's like, I'm not gonna go after him. Like, he's the groom of this wedding that I'm planning. Like, I'm gonna get engaged to this entirely separate person, like, because I'm lonely, but I'm not gonna go with him. And he just like really pursues her because he thinks he's in love with her, and like, that's fine, but also not. And even when even when they're not like actually like making out or whatever, like they're very much in these like emotional cheating situations, which are not cool. But also, again, part of me is like, it's J-Lo, you know, like who among us wouldn't emotionally cheat for her just a little bit? You know, right.
There's one really egregious line that Matthew McConaughey says, I think as they're tangoing and J-Lo's like, why the hell would you do that? Basically. And he was like, I was being a guy and an opportunity presented itself. And I was like,
No.
No. The only redeeming part at the end of this movie where you like are like, fine, we can, I guess, fully ship these two people is that Matthew McConaughey's fiance, Fran, also comes to the conclusion that she doesn't really love him. She doesn't even know what she wants. They've been together so long. She needs to go like refind herself, blah, blah, blah. So obviously they wrote that to happen so that we're like, oh, good. So none of them are actually
okay.
Evil.
Yeah.
But perhaps a little evil in the interim. But yeah, not great.
It's not great. And maybe this is just me, but, you know, this movie ends with two people calling off their weddings at the last possible minute. Like, they're in the dress. They've taken the pictures. J-Lo's, like, at the altar, whatever. Like, the other couple's, like, ready to go. And the concept of calling off a wedding at the last minute is runs against, like, every anti-conflict instinct in my body. Like, I think we've talked about before on this podcast, like if someone publicly proposed to us, we would just say yes and like just deal with it later. Like you just can't make a scene. I like would never, ever want like that attention of saying no. And this is the same thing. Like if you've had so much time to like make this decision and you're like, yes, I'm marrying Matthew McConaughey, even though like, you know, he's emotionally cheating on me and like, I don't think I want to be with him. Like you made that decision. You're in the dress. Like you're doing it. Like I would never, ever call it off at the last possible second. Like could not be me. Could not handle it. Would dissolve into a pile of ash. Like I could not
Kate
do it.
Kate said I would just do it and quietly get divorced in a few years rather than make a scene.
I would just
on the
literally
spot.
Be standing there doing my vows being like, I can put up with this for a couple of years rather than make a scene right here.
I would do it too. There's no doubt. I can't face that.
No doubt.
Hell no.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's do what has aged the best and the worst, Kate.
The main thing that went through my mind, again, this is like my first time really seeing this movie. And, you know, the big famous scene is when she falls in the street and is rescued by Matthew McConaughey. And it brought to mind former Ringer social media team member, Ruby Edmondson, who in real life had actually a very similar experience with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Amazing.
Which kills me every time. She talks about it. She used to talk about it semi-regularly whenever we would like bring it up and force her to tell us a story. But it's online. You can Google like Ruby Edmondson, Leonardo DiCaprio, and it'll come up. But she was like walking in the street. She tweeted this whole thread when it happened. Tripped on cobblestones, went over, like fell hard, felt dazed and dizzy. And a group of men like rescued her and like sat her down. We're like, are you okay? She comes to, looks up, sees Leonardo DiCaprio, and they like make her sit there. They're like, can we contact anyone for you? Like, are you okay? She's like, pretty sure Stanley Tucci was there too.
Yes.
And then Stanley Tucci calls her a cab, then runs after her and goes, hey, just checking to make sure you realize that was Leonardo DiCaprio that saved you so that you can tell your friends.
You know, I've never heard this story before, ever.
Really?
How have you worked at the Ringer and not heard the story?
God,
I know. I work here longer than anyone. That's crazy.
Happened to her in 2013. Also, like, there definitely was a story a couple years ago where, like, Matthew McConaughey, like, saved a woman who was fainting and, like, gave her, like, smelling salts. And she came to and it was, like, Matthew McConaughey right there. So I just love all the, like, real life versions of this.
Yes. Did Leonardo DiCaprio also save someone stranded on his yacht?
Yes.
Didn't he do Amelia? Remember?
Yeah. I do remember. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he did. He was, like, going yachting and someone, like, was washing ashore or something, and he freaking saved them. My God.
Damn. Anyway, this hero. Movie. Anyway. Yeah, that concept has aged well from this movie.
Yes. Also aging really well is our guy, Justin Chambers. He was Massimo in pretty not good accent and, like, character in general. Just a
tough.
And a portrayal is just, like, a stupid kind of, like, thick-headed
relatedly, real quick. Why was J-Lo Italian in this movie? Why not let her have her own cultural heritage?
Amelia's gonna talk. Yeah, Amelia's talking about that later.
Oh, you are.
Issue with it.
No worries. No, it's.
But yeah, agreed. So Justin Chambers, is a childhood friend of J Lo's. I guess. Anyway, he has aged quite well. He's one of those guys where you could have watched this and be like, "Whatever happened to that dude?" Instead, he did 15 years basically on, like, Grey's Anatomy, had, like, an amazing TV career. So
good for him.
Great. All these years later, so
he does. Looks tough accent better now though. Than back then. Really tough Italian accent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. What else has aged the best?
I just love how ambitious Mary is. You know, she's out there being like, "Make me partner." I'm like, "Yes, Mary, you deserve it, girlfriend."
Did you catch in the very beginning of the movie? She did Whitney Houston's wedding.
Yes.
Like, why are you not partner if you did Whitney Houston's wedding?
I know.
But yeah. On the flip side, I would say that, like, they try to make her, especially in the beginning, they're like, frumpy workaholic woman in these rom-coms. Sandra Bullock does it a lot. I didn't expect J-Lo to do it, but she does. Where they get home, they're in, like, this, like, oversized polo and baggy jeans. They, like, sit out their TV dinner. She turns on Antiques Roadshow and she's like, "Look at my sad little life with that man." No.
It's you know dream. What I mean?
Career focused. Yeah. They're not frumpy, quote unquote, or, like, whatever, work obsessed. Anyway, I feel like, A, you can't make J-Lo look frumpy to save your life.
And that's true.
Sandra Bullock.
Correct.
But yeah, just funny of, like, a certain time, these, like, really work-obsessed women that are, like, so undesirable.
Totally. Unlovable, like, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Totally. Oh, my gosh.
And then lastly, Amelia, go ahead.
Yes. It's just, you know, I do, watching back this movie, I really did enjoy it, but I just can't help but be a little disappointed. And I understand it was 2001. Why J-Lo had to be whitewashed and be an Italian woman when she could have been Puerto Rican. And, you know, because I think a lot of her identity is being the strong Puerto Rican woman. And I just, it's so unfortunate that she had to, they had to make it so she's, like, she's ethnic, but not too ethnic. She's Italian. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, all right. So that
was disappointing. And it's a big part of her character's identity, which, like, it could have very easily, like, she didn't have to be Italian and make that such a big part of the story.
Right.
Okay, let's do MVP. Kate, who's your pick?
Just love Judy Greer. Yeah. Everything she's in, she's always the same character. She's like the kooky, like, little friend who has, like, best crazy friend. Hair and crazy eyes. And she just cracks me up. I just love her.
Yep.
She's cute.
I'm picking Matthew McConaughey because that tango scene, the man can dance. He can move his body. He has the control. And just bravo. Not a lot of leading rom-com men can do that.
So true.
It's true.
And then Amelia.
You know what? I think it's pretty obvious that J-Lo and Matthew McConaughey are just so charming in this movie. And they have such great chemistry. And they need to be in more movies together. I would love to see them in a new rom-com together, honestly.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the little Scrabble gang with her dad and his friends. They were so sweet. And they had really cute lines. Like, there's Bert, who is the park policeman guy. And he was just like, "You know, when a lady asks you to dance, you dance." And I'm like, "Yeah, Bert."
Tell him, Bert.
Right.
Okay, lightning round. Do one of you want to take this?
I wrote this one. Does this movie make you more or less inclined to believe J-Lo's no Botox claims?
Less.
It makes me less inclined to believe it. She looks different than she looks now. She looks incredible now. And she looked incredible then, but she looks different.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
I think a lot of the movie, she's very perplexed and she's like
a lot
and
of
you
wrinkles.
Can just see a lot of the lines at every
natural
face makes.
Wrinkles.
Yeah. Oh, okay. See, I thought she looks so similar that I was like, why? No, I believe her, but I mean, I don't know. I'm bad at judging these things. I can only judge it if it's like Nicole Kidman and she hasn't moved her face
like,
in 15 years.
In years.
So, yeah.
Yes.
I just want to say, starting off, Love Don't Cost a Thing. That just decided to play as the end credits were rolling. And I was like, this feels like a little not very congruous to the whole plot of the film. Okay, I'm not saying it's a bad song. It's a good song, but it felt a little off to me. And so was this the right song to feature, the right J-Lo song to feature at the end?
No. But obviously, you know, I mean, she ended This Land Is Your Land with Let's Get Loud last week. So I don't know why.
True.
She loves a good finale, a good peppy finale. I would have featured On the Floor featuring Pitbull. But it was a couple years too early for that bop. So,
damn.
Yeah, no, I don't know what I would have swapped in, but not that.
I'm sure it's like in her contract to sign on for the movie being like,
yeah,
sure. But the first song is the credits roll are going to be a song of mine. But didn't think this one was the right fit. Not sure.
I know. I was thinking about this. Like, I went back and looked at the J-Lo discography and I thought, wow, and I re-listened to some of the songs and they're all like very early 2000s, like poppy kind of music. And so it didn't feel like, I don't know, any of them felt that correct. But I thought that I'm Real kind of felt more fitting. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, that's okay.
If it happened today, she would like,
I don't know.
If she released this today, it would be like a duet with Ed Sheeran. So I guess we should just like, you know,
oh my God.
Take what we got.
Yeah. That's true.
And then last lightning round was mine. I said, what was Matthew McConaughey's most egregious move in this whole thing? Is it telling your fiance you saved an old lady when you really saved a woman like J-Lo? Was it accepting a date when you are fully engaged? Was it the slow dancing on said date? Or was it not saying anything when they almost kiss?
Wow.
Which is your pick?
I think it's really close. It's really tough to pick. I'm going to go with the old lady lie because it was so early. Yeah. Like, he could not have been fully in love with her yet, which I think like kind of forgives a little bit the other stuff. Like, you just saved a hot lady on the street and you felt so threatened by your attraction to her that you told your fiance that she was old. You know, like that was like right off the bat a mistake. Right. So I'm going to go with that one.
Totally.
I think the slow dancing is such an intimate thing to do, especially with no one else. Like, it's just too intimate. And that is actually a line crossed. Like, in my opinion, I don't know. I would be that is no. That's a huge no.
It's also like so utterly not platonic. Like the other stuff you can early on, you can kind of forgive a little bit because like he didn't know it was a date. Like, you know, Judy or Greer left. Like originally it was supposed to be the three of them.
Yeah.
But the slow dancing, like you're doing that and you immediately know that like this is not like a friendly thing.
There could be so many. There's like the flirty. Like,
it's all
bad.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we move on to the next category?
Let's do it.
Yes.
All right. We're going to do Tea Time's Unanswerable Questions. February's coming up, you guys, in just a couple days. And I really found this fun piece of celeb news. Kate Hudson is doing a collab with Urban Stems, the flower company, and I didn't realize she had one, her own vodka company, King Saint Vodka.
Wow.
And she's made a love fern, just like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, which I love that movie. Wow. So you can buy a love fern and send it to someone. I think it's a really, really cute idea. I'm surprised she didn't think of this earlier.
Yeah.
But it's a timeless movie. So who are we buying love ferns for this Valentine's Day? I kind of just wanted to talk about the love fern. I don't really have a real question attached.
That's great. Another great Matthew McConaughey rom-com.
I know. It's so good. Anyway,
is that his best one? I think that's probably his best one, right?
Yeah.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
I honestly haven't seen it in forever.
But... You haven't seen it?
Oh, I have, but I haven't seen it in forever. Yeah.
Maybe we should add it to the cringe mode list.
Buy yourselves a love
fern. That's a good idea.
Yeah, we could. What are the questions we got? Because mine wasn't a question. Mine was a statement.
Just in the background of our discussion being like, love fern. okay, my question is, why and how has Dakota Johnson become one of our most memeable celebrities? And does she deserve the memes that have been created around her? Obviously, the most obvious one recently was the Ellen DeGeneres meme. No, that's not true, Ellen. Which now happened like a year ago, like last Christmas. And then everything happened and it just kept coming back.
Wild.
And now, you know, like she had that Architectural Digest thing where she showed off her house. Yep. And she talked about the limes and how much she loved limes. And that became a meme for no reason. People were just like, I love limes. And now she did an interview where she was like, actually, I hate limes, not allergic to them, which now has also become a meme. And everyone's like, is Dakota Johnson lying to us? Like, what is the truth? And I'm just like, it's just Dakota Johnson. You know, like, is she that entertaining that we need to turn everything into a meme?
I like how she's like, she's just kind of a weirdo. And I really like that.
I do. I think that's part of it, is she's just like kind of chaotic and strange and sarcastic and like kind of in really like sarcastic. An Aubrey Plaza way where like nobody really knows if she's joking or not.
I also think she's like not anchored by any like project. So all we can talk about is just like who she is as a person. There's no discussion of like her movies or anything she's in or going to be in. So
that's
like,
true.
Oh, we can be. And regardless, we're going to talk about her. So we might as well talk about her chaotic energy.
Right. And we don't really care about her projects either. It's kind of like a January Jones thing where like we care more about her memeability and celebrity than we do about like any actual acting she's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. Yeah. But she's such a meme constantly now. And I'm just like, when did she become
it's kind
such
of
a memeable celebrity? I just don't know. Why do we care if she likes limes?
That's it's unanswerable, so Kate.
It is.
It really That's is. True. Except I have really grown to like her. Like, I really like her.
Me too, honestly. Yeah. I just don't know why or when, but sure. Why not?
Same.
All right, last one, Amelia.
Last one. And you know, I wrote this question before I actually watched an episode of The Masked Dancer, like the one last night. And so it has kind of changed. But my original question was, how did The Masked Dancer manage to get bigger celebrities than The Masked Singer? And then last night it was revealed that, spoiler alert, the hammerhead shark was Vinny from the Jersey Shore, which that seems like a Masked Singer celebrity. So, but they had before that, they had Bill Nye, who I think is like, I mean, I'm not saying that he is A-list, but he's like a pretty like
he's big
knows
for
who,
our generation.
Yeah, everyone knows who he is. Ice-T, I think like he's still on SVU, right? Like that's kind
he
of,
was on The Masked Dancer.
Yes, he was the microphone, I think.
Can I ask you, Amelia, how that's going? How are they dancing with those big costumes on? Like, how is a hammerhead shark?
Dude, I don't even know. It was like, you could kind of tell, like, who's not an actual dancer. And, like, there's this, like, the two, I sound like I'm a crazy person. I'm like, the tulip. But the tulip started dancing. And my dad noticed, he was like, wow, the tulip actually has some great moves. Like, she can move her, like, legs in positions that, like a dancer can. So we're thinking it's Gabby Douglas. And then some of the clues make
it
seem.
How far she's fallen, Jesus.
But we support her, you know. And then there was another one. I don't remember what dancer it was, but my dad noted, he was like, oh, this person has to be an athlete because they are moving with such agility. And then Brian Austin Green, of course, was like, wow, you must be an athlete because you're moving with such agility. And I was like, oh my God, dad.
Get your dad on that show. Get him on that judges panel.
I mean, he probably could, because why is a Brian Austin Green there? But anyway, Brian McKnight, who was a huge singer in like the 90s, like I guess he's not as popular obviously anymore, but like he was really big in the 90s. And then, as you know, I'm sure people have heard, but they got freaking Elizabeth Smart to be on this show, which is amazing.
We didn't touch that, right? Last week? We just talked about it privately? Wow. What a,
That's like the most dystopian choice. I just can't.
It is. But then, you know what? And she talked about this when when she was unveiled as Miss Moth. She was like, you know what? Life is hard. And her grandma had recently died and she was just sitting, she said she was sitting at the funeral and she was like, you know what? My grandma liked to have fun. I want to have fun too. And it's like, that's so great. You have fun, Elizabeth Smart. If there's anyone who deserves to have fun, it's Elizabeth Smart.
Was the implication that she was sitting at her grandma's funeral and she decided to go on The Masked Dancer?
Kind of.
For those
because they had asked her.
This plan always gets away from us in the end. Like, we stay on track for 50 minutes.
We just have a lot of questions about the logistics of that epiphany.
There's
but anyway,
we're like, oh God, we're still recording. Okay, yeah. Elizabeth Smart, weird, interesting.
But happy for her. Happy for her that she went on. She deserves to have a good time. And
she does.
I'm just excited to see who else gets unmasked, you know?
So am I, truly.
Yeah.
I really am.
Okay, that'll do it. That's another Tea Time episode. Thank you, Kaya. Our producer, as always, I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Hallowell.
And I'm Amelia Whitmer.